Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. We're Baltimore Positive. We're here at State Fair. It is a cup of soup or bowl. I have a bowl of cream of crab soup. Pretty delish. I had one bite of it. This guy's going to do a lot of talking, so I'm going to be able to eat. It's our final segment of the day here. We're at State Fair. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I have the lucky Magic 8 Ball. I've been scratching that off. We got a big game going on this weekend. One day left at Cooper's North. We've had a lot of celebs, a lot of fun, a lot of charity, a lot of community stuff, fun stories, allowing me to stretch out and have a good time here this week. We'll wrap things up at Cooper's. Next week, back to our regularly scheduled Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We'll be at Libs Grill in Bel Air. Harford County Executive Bob Cassily will be my guest. As will Joe Slifka. I'm sure we'll be telling old barn stories and Raven stories. This guy and I have old Orioles stories. I think I met him 30-some-odd years ago. I always think you're a lot younger than me, but I don't think you really are, but we're going to figure this out. Jason Seamer is a local rock star, musician, photographer, bon vivant, wanderlust man who is just back from his African expedition shooting photos of safari in places like Kenya. He's been my friend for a long time. He plays rock and roll in a band called Bad With Names. I am good with names. He's Jason Seamer of Canton, Maryland, but shooting pictures in Kenya. Welcome back, fellow wanderlust guy. You know, you travel the world taking these pictures and stuff, doing things that I want to do or my wife wants to do, but you're such a great photographer that you become sort of immersed in that I often wonder, is he having fun out there, or is taking the pictures part of the fun? Because it reminds me a little bit like when you go to the concert and everybody's holding the camera on the band instead of like jamming. So that would be my first question to you. The second thing is, dude, you took unbelievable pictures, and there's a million people that have been to Africa taking millions and millions of pictures, but they're your pictures, they're your images, and I know your soul a little bit about the wanderlust. I would think that you were very, very pleased with how your African adventure worked out, being that you spent most of your life planning it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the first thing I want to address is what you said about the first of all, thanks for having me. It's always great to see you, Nestor.
Back
it has
Let's
been many years.
Enjoy yourself. You got some coffee.
What you said about taking photos and still enjoying yourself, the answer is I enjoy everything equally. Like, the fact that I'm taking photos and being there kind of all mixes together. And people say that. They're like, oh, you know, put the camera down once in a while.
Well, then you come home, you get to experience it again and again the rest of your life.
Well, totally. But also, like, when I'm in that moment and I'm taking a photo and I have, like, something framed up through the lens, I'm actually, like, I'm feeling that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a connection there. So then, don't worry. Like, once I have my shot, I put the camera down. Then I see it with my own eyes and I appreciate it on that level also. And then I have that photo to relive when I come home. Like,
so those giraffes, as an example, you see them, wow, holy hell, it's giraffes.
Yeah.
You do 6 minutes of that, and the giraffe's still standing there after six, right? And then, this is cool. And once you get your, you satiate, you get the shot, and then you chill out a little bit.
Totally.
Then you have a bevy.
But also, like, part of the fun for me is, like, waiting for that giraffe to get in a certain position or to get framed.
I do that with birds. I had that this morning. Like, my wife has the bird feeder, and we get bluebirds. And this morning, you know, I tried. I got a couple of decent, you know, nothing great. But at one point, they all sit up and look at you.
That's what I'm
saying.
And
that's the one.
Exactly.
So you try to get 50 of them to just, like, there's the good one there. Or these are the two good ones. I got a couple. See, my little bluebird. So I am a shutter shooter. I have, I liked it. You see my pictures. I think I have an eye for it.
Sure.
I don't have your equipment, let's start with that, in Africa to take those kinds of images. But I think a cell phone would be fine. But my wife loves photography.
Yeah.
She admires you and watches your thing. She wants to do the African thing. And for some people, that's the most exotic thing they'll ever do, ever. For you, it's a panorama of other exotic things. You've done Thailand, you've done New Zealand, Patagonia.
Yeah.
Where does the African thing lie for you? And this is for my wife or anybody considering going to Africa, including the man who saved her life, that it feels pricey, distant, long. I wouldn't know the right way to do it. Dude, you're jumping out of a hot air balloon. I mean, the amount of research you went into, did you borrow someone else's idea or did you spend 8 months researching this?
Well, this thing kind of started like years ago. With the first time I went to New Zealand, I did a group tour with a company called Contiki.
I did a Contiki tour in Australia. Okay.
Yeah.
Young girls, under 35,
all
discos,
that.
Beer.
Yeah.
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 Oh, it was a trip of my life until
I
had another one.
It was great, but I was telling people on this the last trip that I did that type of trip was interesting at the time because I was in probably my early 30s, but I'm not into all that. Like, it was just go, 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 and a party, and I was seeing things that I had, you know, had never seen, and they blew my mind, like the landscapes of New Zealand, and that actually got me hooked on, like, going to really far-off places. But now it's more about, like, the photography and smaller group tours. So I've been using this company called G Adventures, and they're affiliated with National Geographic, so they do, like, really good, high-quality...
So you were on a tour.
Yeah, okay. You know, these days, Nestor, like,
I'm
done with all that crazy stuff.
I am a piecer-togetherer. I don't ever...
Yeah.
I may do a day trip or get on a boat or a thing that you, an excursion as they would call it on the cruises or whatever.
For sure.
But I'm not a cruise guy.
Yeah.
I'm not a dock guy. I do it myself.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd like that, but I like what you did. So that's why I want to hear it. I don't think I could do Africa alone. I would have to find
Here's the thing.
These,
like,
kind of people.
Most of these tours I've done, I've probably done like 4 or 5 G adventure tours in various parts of the world. And what I do is I use that as kind of like the anchor for the rest of the tour. So it's a good chance, like, if you've never been to that part of the world, to go. That way you have like a group that you know you're going to be with and you're safe. And
for
the
a week. There's a structure of that.
Exactly.
And there's the beginning and the end.
And then
during that
time, you're learning like the local – how people go about things, the money, the traditions, like just the way of life. And then you're meeting these guides that are like from there. So they can kind of like tell you what things are like and then give you suggestions on like where to go after that, what's safe, what not to do. And basically like people just open doors for you and then you just kind of go through them because you take recommendations from people that you trust at that point, you know. So then you're just like, okay, I'm going to go do this. And I have this now because I'm acclimated to the country and I can like feel more confident now kind of like going off on my own after that.
How long were you over there?
3 weeks.
3 weeks, okay.
In East Africa?
Yeah.
Yeah.
3 weeks in East Africa, and you put months into this.
Yeah.
How much of it was tour involved? A week?
So it was like 2.5 weeks of tour, and then I came home. So in this particular trip, I didn't go off on my own because I learned that in order to do that, to see the animals and to do all these things, it kind of has to be more lined up and put together. You can't just go off because, like, it's not safe. Like, and I'm not saying from, like a, being afraid of your life kind of thing. But you still need people.
There's no gas station out there. There's no food out there.
Yeah. You need people, and you also have – you go to these places, and literally there's wild animals. And, like, it's not safe to just walk around out in the wilderness, obviously. Like, to have a guide, to have somebody driving a car – maybe set up, you know, take you to a safe campsite, things like that. Like, this was the type of tour that you kind of need. That
you loved it. You felt safe. You felt good.
Totally. But I don't think I could have just rented a car and gone off.
Oh, I don't think you can do that.
But other places I have, but not for this one. And I needed to learn that when I got there. So I'm glad that I stayed close to home base with my group. If I were to go back, I still wouldn't rent a car and go around.
Like, yeah.
Unless I really met some locals that like brought me in and took care of me. You know?
I don't know that I would know where to start other than, you know, with Oprah's enchantment, you know, encounter or whatever.
Yeah.
And I've seen things stupid expensive over there.
Yeah.
And I've seen things so inexpensive that it felt like that might not be legit or safe.
Yeah.
My wife put effort into this. Back in 2010, we were going to do the World Cup in South Africa. We had two other couples and a friend who were willing to do it. I was Budweiser sponsored at the time, so I had the ability to get tickets. Mm-hmm. Remember, the U.S. had played well in 02, 06 not so good. We went to Germany, loved the World Cup in Germany. We were going to go to South Africa. The economy fell apart. All of our friends didn't have the 5, 8, 10 grand it was going to take to maybe go do it. But I did a lot of legwork through Dubai and Air Emirates and into Johannesburg and Pretoria and all of these South African places. But everyone said the best safaris were to go to Zimbabwe or to go to Kenya. Mm. And that's pretty much what you did. Because we could have done Kruger in Johannesburg. And I was like, nah. I mean, you know, I had looked at the Seychelles. I had looked at Zanzibar. I had looked at other things to do in that part of the world that in 2010, it's 15 years ago. Yep. We never did it. I never made it. But I put a lot of effort into it. So I felt like I knew a little bit about it, and I knew enough to say, this is not something you're going to stay at the Super 8 and do on your own any sort of way that you're going to need a group. And then it's, is it the $500 group, the $1,000 group, the $2,500 group? Yeah. Do you want to be at Oprah's play? Like, and then it became like it was a little paralyzed by it, just saying, well, I want to see the Big Five or, you know, whatever. And then I'm like, I can go to the zoo and do that, you know, to some degree, unless I'm feeling like I want to be in Africa.
Yeah.
I think I wanted to be there 15 years ago. I think it feels rugged to me now. Mm. It feels like 3 weeks of that would be a lot of money and maybe something that I would do the little taste of it, the easier way. Mm-hmm. But your way, I think the thing about it, Jason, is that I might never do it, and that's what makes it so appealing to do it through your eyes and want you on the show to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. First of all,
you're here to talk me into it.
You should do it. No, that's what I'm saying. There's
I knew you would.
I get messages from people when I'm doing this traveling, and it's kind of like I'm like honored that they say these things. That like, hey, I'm following through your eyes, and I appreciate what you're doing. But the thing that like kind of jars me a little bit is when they're like, "I'll never do that," and I'm like, why? Like, I get it if you can't physically do it, or like maybe you have a job or you can't take off for 3 weeks. I'm lucky I'm a freelancer so that I can make my own schedule and tell my clients, hey, I'm not going to be around. Are you cool? Like, I still like kind of clear it with my clients, but January is usually when I travel because there's not much going on.
And if you go south, you go in the summer, period. Yeah. Was it hot?
Yeah. It was their dry season. It was probably 80s, but it was dry and dusty. And definitely a little uncomfortable at times. At night, it got really cold. Once that sun started blazing, it was like it was on. But I'm just saying, like, when people say I'll never do that, I become like a little disappointed, and I'm like, what's holding you back, you know? And I get there's different reasons, but what I hope that doesn't hold people back is that like fear of like just stepping out of their comfort zone, because like once you do that and you realize that. And you make that effort, and you book the trip, and you get there, and you're standing in the middle of one of these places that you only saw on TV or in the movies. You just stand there, and you're like, I'm here.
I thought Yellowstone was that way as a grand place that I've been.
Yeah.
And I you know, I've been a lot of places that are – I mean, I've been to South Island in New Zealand. I've been to Australia.
Yeah.
I've been on the Great Wall of China in Beijing. You know what I mean?
But what's that feeling? You know, when you're there, you're just like, oh, my God, I'm here. I'm doing this. You know what I mean?
I love that feeling.
Yeah.
I live for that. That's a jam for me.
Same.
I want to do Banff. You know, I the things I want to do now aren't as sports-oriented as they are experiential. I want to go to Royal Albert Hall because there's history there. I almost went to see Bryan Adams last year, but it was so expensive. I was just like, London's really expensive right now. Like, really, like, three times more than you'd want to spend to do anything.
Got it.
And I'm like, ah, let's go to New York and wait it out.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a little bit of a waited out. I'm going to do South America. Mm-hmm. My friend Bruce, who just came by, had done Machu Picchu.
Yep.
But my bucket list places are... I mean, I've been to Australia three times now. It was a dream to go once. Mm-hmm. I had a dream to go to one Super Bowl. I did 27. So there's some of this, like, I wanted to go to Wimbledon.
Yeah.
And then I got offered tickets and a chance, and I'm like,
not into it.
Nah, it's just a lot of money. Even if you get, I mean, Pam Shriver gets your tickets, it's just a really expensive trip.
Sure.
And I'm like, nah, but I don't want to go to Cleveland again. You know, I mean, the fact that Chad Steele's taken away my ability to go to New Orleans for the 18th time and be drunk in the streets there, I don't need to do that. But my bucket list as I'm getting older is somehow shrinking in some way. Like, I think I'm going to do Alaska on a cruise one day. I think that'll be a cruise thing that I would want to do. But I don't have much. And if I had an unlimited amount of money, in fact, you gave me $1 million right now and said go do anything you want and travel anywhere you want, I would be cheap. You know, I would be like, I want to go see the Hollywood Bowl. I want to see a concert at the Hollywood Bowl.
And go ahead.
But I don't want to see Notre Dame or the Big House, or I don't need to go to football games anymore.
Okay.
You went through that. You were a baseball nerd, right?
Yeah, I was.
Give everybody your background. What you dreamed about doing at 23 versus at whatever you – I don't even know how old you are.
I just turned 50 in October.
Okay.
So that was kind of why I took this Africa
trip.
Oh,
that was your big one. Oh,
yeah, kind of.
Okay.
I was like, you know, this is one I always wanted to do, but it was pretty expensive. I was like, but you know what? I got work lined up. I'll be good.
Yeah. What else are you going to spend with your money? Do what you love.
I mean – I don't know.
What's left? Are you going to go to Machu Picchu? Do you have any of these places or no?
I don't. The whole hiking thing, once I did Patagonia, I did the W trek there. That was like.
It's grueling.
Yeah.
It's grueling.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of grueling.
It's absolutely incredible.
And if you got sick there or something, it'd be terrible.
I mean,
and that part of. I know Patagonia. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not. That's rugged.
It was incredible. But I was like, if I was in a group of people, of course I'm carrying like lenses and cameras and stuff because I like bring way too much because I don't want to be without a certain lens if I have a shot. You know, it's that.
How
kind
many
of thing.
Did you not use?
Right. Well, I ended up like literally, this is a little embarrassing, but like paying like one of the guides or whatever, like a little extra just to carry my lens, one of my bigger lenses for me.
Okay.
Because I'm like struggling getting up these like mountains and stuff.
Well, you are
like,
getting older. You're not 25
yeah,
anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And like, you know, so I wouldn't, I don't know, the whole hike thing. I'm not saying I don't go on hikes when I do these things or I won't anymore, but like something extreme like Machu Picchu or Patagonia again, or even like Kilimanjaro. People on my trip in my group had just done Kilimanjaro like the week before, and I'm like, I don't really need
They're
to
They're real
do that.
Hikers, right? Yeah.
I'm just like last. I'm always like the last guy.
I'm never going to play pickleball,
you know?
Just as an example. You know what I mean?
What's that?
I'm never going to play pickleball.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's just things I could do that I'm not going to do physically.
Right.
Because I could do something else. I'd rather do yoga. Jason Seymour's here. He's bad with names. He is a rock star. He is a photographer. He is a wanderlust traveler who just got back from 3 weeks in Eastern Africa taking beautiful pictures that you sell. Please promote. Tell everybody. Because you take pictures in a lot of – you were at the Faroe Islands last year. I'll give you a chance to talk about that. But you have picked, much like me, sort of weird things that you might want to do.
Yeah.
Really unique. I don't know why I was in Manapouri in southern New Zealand other
there
than it was there.
Totally.
And then it was like, well, we can do Milton Sound, which is the tourist sound, or we can do Doubtful Sound, where we're going to freeze our ass off, go over a hill, do all this. We did that one. You know, and it cost a little more, and we were like, let's do, we're going all the way to the southern part of New Zealand. We're going to do the rugged thing.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm 56 now. I don't need to be bougie or Gucci about any of this stuff, but I want to go back to Japan.
Okay.
That's something that I love Japan, so I want to go back. I love Europe, but, you know, I want to do Scandinavia again at some point.
Yeah.
But my things aren't out in the fields because of your photography. I do live vicariously through you. I do think the African thing for me, what would you recommend for a tenderfoot of your part of your trip? Was there a specific area in Kenya, Zimbabwe, places you went that you're like, if you go and you're only doing 5 days or 8 days, these are the places and the animals and the things that you want to do?
Yeah, well, not only did I do Kenya, but we went into Tanzania also. And Kenya was awesome because it was, like, really rugged and raw and legendary, you know. And, you know, you kind of have to, I don't know, the bucket list kind of place. But once we got into Tanzania, the Serengeti was just, like, that's like the iconic National Geographic area, you know? So that's where I did a hot air balloon over the Serengeti at sunrise, took some amazing photos.
I want to do Albuquerque for the hot air balloons.
Okay.
It always, it's my birthday weekend. It's always the second weekend of October. It was always in Raven season. So it was like, I have never done it.
Yeah.
And it feels touristy, like a million balloons or whatever. But it feels like a photography from a beauty stamp. To be there one time on that Saturday morning in Albuquerque, which is doable.
Yep.
You know, there's no reason to not do
it. You got
to
do it,
It's on my list.
It's the same thing.
See, having you here gives you, you're expanding my bucket list to give me real ideas.
And I'm not, I never thought I would be in a hot air balloon, honestly. And, like, I bungee jumped over the Zawari, off the Zawari Bridge, or the Zawari River in New Zealand. And I'm not a bungee jumper.
I would never bungee jump.
I was never even a roller coaster guy. But, like, when I'm in these places, I'm like, well, when am I going to be able to do this again? I'll probably never go back to that bridge in New Zealand.
My wife wanted to walk the Sydney Bridge. You can you can strap in on the Sydney Bridge over Sydney Harbor and do it, and it's a couple $100 or whatever. And I was like, oh, go get a beer. You go do it.
Yeah.
Her sugar and her diabetes at the time, she didn't have the monitor. Mm. She regrets it. And you know when she really, really, really regretted it?
Yeah.
When our friend went over and did it a month ago, and she saw her on top of it.
Yeah.
She's like, I should have done that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you weren't physically able to do it at the time. It was right after she had cancer the second time.
Yeah.
So it's like, she just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But like, she might wind up going back and do it. You know, she has regrets. I've beaten her up pretty good over 18 years. We were in South America. We were chasing you too. You'll appreciate this. And the Stones. We went to Rio. We went to Sao Paulo. We went to Buenos Aires. And we were in Buenos Aires, but we fell in love with Buenos Aires. We were drinking, eating, the whole deal. We gained 20 pounds in Buenos Aires. And we were at the Buenos Aires. We didn't have a cat. We didn't have kids. That's when I was running the station, but I wasn't on the air, so I didn't have to come back and do radio. And I had points. American Airlines. U2 was playing Santiago, Chile.
Yeah.
And there's a place called Viña del Mar, which is their vineyard area in Chile. And Journey was playing there, and Bryan Adams, too. And I'm like, look. We're in Buenos Aires. Yeah. It's going to cost $800 total for us to reroute to go to Santiago and go to Viña del Mar. We're having the greatest time of our life. Let's extend 5 days and just go do this.
And you did it?
No, we didn't do it. So every time I'm
so
somewhere,
excited.
Every time I'm somewhere where I get a bowl of chili, or if it's chili outside,
you're thinking about it, the regret.
Or anything comes on the TV from Chile, or they have a earthquake in Chile, I ram it at her.
Yeah.
I'm like, you remember that time we were going to go to Chile?
That's what I'm saying.
We didn't do Chile.
I know. And that feeling that you have where you regret it, if you had done it, you would have that opposite feeling whenever you saw Chile. Do you know what I'm saying?
I know.
The extreme opposite. And there's nothing like that feeling, which is why you should always do the thing. Come on, man.
Hold on. Always do the thing.
Yeah.
Every guest I've had this week has given me one little thing. Always do the thing. Jason Seamer's doing it. When's your band playing?
Friday night at the Admiral's Cup in Fells Point. Every first Friday of the month this year will be at the Admiral's Cup in Fells Point, in addition to the rest of our schedule.
They are a rockin' 90s power rock pop kind of band. Tell me what you play so people come see you. What I just said.
Yeah, 90s rock, party rock, anything that kind of gets you – get you moving and having a good time, having a couple drinks.
Places like Fager's Island, Ocean City, down at the Admiral's Cup. You can book the band as well at Bad With Names. And you're a photographer. If people want to hire you, tell them how to find you.
JasonSeemerPhotography.com. Jason, S-I-E-M-E-R, photography.com. There's an email link on there. You can reach out to me. I also have a Facebook page, Jason Seemer Photography, all one word. That'll link to that. And an Instagram, Jason_Seamer_photography.
I don't want to say that I'm disappointed I brought you out next to me because I like you and I don't get in a room with you much. And I thought it'd be fun to tell these stories. This might have been better on Zoom where we pull your pictures up and talk, you know, through the animals.
Let's
and
do
the
that
people.
Another time.
Well, we should because you took pictures. You know, I spent time in the islands and there are a lot of people and you know, maybe they're racist. I don't know. They have to speak for themselves. But I don't want to go to Jamaica. It's poor. I don't feel safe because they're poor and they are a different color and it's unsafe. And I read things on the internet or whatever. So many of your African pictures of the colors of the fruit stands and the people and their clothing.
Yeah.
And today's Bob Marley's birthday. Oh. So, you know, one love always, right? Those kinds of pictures of happy people in poverty. Never going to escape poverty. Don't even have dreams of leaving poverty. Never want to leave the island.
Yep.
You've captured these beautiful images of these folks in Africa. And then after that, there were birds and people and beast of burden and village life. And then these people, these just these African villagers, you captured their emotions in some way. You must have... Where did you get that? Did you do some sort of luau or some sort of community village? How did you meet so many locals to photograph them?
Well, the first part of the trip when we were first leaving Nairobi to get out to our first safari spot, Samburu National Reserve, there's a Samburu tribe there. And G Adventures has it set up where you can kind of...
A welcoming group.
And, you know, it felt... There was times when it felt a little touristy, but at the same time, you're like... You're not just going to go into a you know, start hanging out. So it was a little, it was arranged. That being said, they're all authentic tribal people.
They weren't imported from Atlanta, correct?
Right.
Yes.
They're not actors, you know.
They're not African Americans. They're African.
Absolutely.
Correct.
So that's how we got to, you know, get a little closer to those people. But I don't know if you saw the first series of photos I was putting up en route to that area. I was literally driving in our safari vehicle with my camera out the window, anticipating little scenes coming up of the markets and the people and people on different modes of transportation. And
you were clicking so fast you didn't even see it,
I had like a very fast shutter speed set up, and I'm waiting for it to pass by. And
so you didn't really see the picture that you got home. Kind
exactly.
Of sort of right. Yeah,
so
now
I'm going through the stuff, and I'm like,
look at that goat.
That's exactly what I want. Like, it was all roll of the dice, but like now that I see it, I'm like, this is like priceless stuff.
Nice.
For sure.
Nice.
Yeah,
so. Well, priceless trip. Jason Seemer was over in Africa doing his thing. So you have a next one or no? I mean, is there a This was your 50th birthday. You've been to all these weird places. Yeah. I don't know what. You probably picked Thailand at some of these places based on budget. Some of these places are inexpensive to go to,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Literally. I mean, because South America is more inexpensive right now, which is why I'm not going to London for $500 a night when I can go to Bogota for a week for $500. Yeah. You know what I mean? And see a place I've never seen.
Yeah.
So I'm really, man, the last 3-4 years, I have only gone places where there's some element to it. Mm-hmm. I've been to L.A. a million times. Now they've had fires there or whatever.
Yeah.
But I haven't been to the Hollywood Bowl. So I'm not going back to L.A. till I can get to the, you know, I want to do Joshua National Tree Park, right? Yeah. Joshua Tree. So there's some things I want to do that I haven't hit. I've never been to Palm Springs.
Yeah.
Last year, I had never been to Lake Tahoe. Mm. I had never been to Reno. I had never been to Sacramento, and I have friends there.
Yeah.
So I booked a trip, and I went and saw Brian Adams in Lake Tahoe, and
go.
I drove up the mountain.
See?
I had never been any place where when you come down from Lake Tahoe, it was a year ago last week. It was championship game week because the Niners and the Ravens were – it was the week the Ravens played, but I went away during the middle of the week for my mental health. Basically.
Good for you.
Yeah, well, you remember the Orioles. I have them both
somewhat.
Now. So, sports have been bad about it, good to me. So I leave Tahoe, and it's like snowing a little bit, and then you got to come down the hill towards Sacramento, and I'm like in a rental, you know, that I got in Reno, and they're like, pull over and put the chains on.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know nothing. I'm from Colgate. I don't know nothing about no chains.
Yeah,
you know?
Reality check.
So, $50 at the top, $50 at the bottom. Take them on, put them off.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like a dumbass. I'm like, hey, what am I doing? I got no choice. I'm going down. I want to go to Sacramento today.
Yeah,
I got a car.
Yeah,
what am I going to do?
Yeah.
So it's been a while since I've been pinched in that way. Yep. I always think travel's a little bit like that, you know?
It's funny you say that because I tell people when they're like, when you do these trips, like, aren't you, like, nervous or whatever? And I'm like, look, one thing you have to expect is there are going to be moments when you feel really stupid, just like you said, like, or just, like, you're doing things that you never took into account for or you just, like, weren't ready for. Or there's certain local traditions or something that you're just like.
Well, the language barrier isn't great most places Americans would go. For any American to go to Europe, they speak English for the most part.
Yeah.
For the even in France where they pretend you can get by. I've only been a handful of places where, and I speak enough Spanish to get by in South America and Cuba, places I've been.
Mm-hmm.
Australia, they speak English.
Yeah.
Dude, land in Tokyo. Go ahead. Land in Beijing and try to do anything.
Yeah.
And I went, one of the funniest stories, I tell this story all the time because I'm missing a finger, right? I'm missing a pretty key finger here. It was cool, like picked my nose when I was a kid. We went on our own in China. We were there with Ripken and we're there with the State Department and we're at really Tony Hotel and we had all of these lists of things that never mentioned Taiwan. It's offensive to anybody and you're not allowed to say the word Taiwan in China.
Interesting.
That's part of China to them, right?
Yeah,
it's just weird, right? So the State Department told us, don't open your eyes in the shower because the water will have parasites. Don't drink, like all these things. This is in Beijing, right?
Yeah.
And you could see how dirty the air was. The smog was incredible in Beijing. And the smog in Seoul, Korea, incredible. Mm. So we got in a cab to go to a restaurant that we had found in the Photos Guide, or maybe it was a timeout guide, because it was 2007. It's called Bellagio, of all places. Mm. We went, Chinese place, everybody smoking cigarettes, crazy, bowls of noodles. It's a real, you know, Asian noodle kind of place. I think it might have been Vietnamese, like, in its reality, Vietnamese cuisine. So we ordered some Dan Dan noodles, and they bring me a bowl. And I don't speak any Mandarin, obviously, and they don't speak. There's no one anywhere that speaks English.
Mm.
So everything is pointing and communicating.
Yeah.
And that's, like, it's like being a child again or dealing with a child or an animal that
challenge
can't.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they brought the food. They brought my wife food and noodles. And I held my finger up, and I'm trying to show them. They brought me chopsticks, right?
Yeah.
This speaks to your first point of things you think you have never done and can't do and haven't tried enough.
Yeah.
And I'm missing a finger, so I can't use chopsticks.
So they're like 4.5?
I can't, like, do chopsticks. They literally, the woman brought me, and I have some video. She brought me toothpicks because that's all they had. They didn't have forks.
Yeah.
It's China. They don't do forks there. They didn't have forks.
Yeah.
So they brought me toothpicks. And it was at that moment in 2007, October 7, I was 40 years old, I said, I'm going to learn to eat with chopsticks.
Okay.
And when I went back to Asia and Japan, I ate every single thing I could find with chopsticks
because
I learned how to eat.
Yeah.
Because I was embarrassed. It was a cultural thing. Sure. It's what I laugh like hell about. Right. They felt bad that I had a finger missing, but they didn't know what to do with it. Yeah. They're like, dude, learn to eat with chopsticks.
Yeah. For sure, yeah. And there's going to be those times, and that's a unique story that not many other people tell.
You feel dumb.
But, yeah, you do. And you're always, like, you're always screwing up in some way because you're not from there. And also, you're a little nervous. Absolutely.
Did you read anything of what not to do or not to say? Or is there anything in Africa that you absolutely shouldn't have done? Like, if you would have given money to the villagers, is that offensive to them? Or is that, I'm just want, like, you don't want to offend someone in a in their heart through poverty or through you're a rich white guy from America and they're, that's always an issue for me with poverty and other places. When I have a man come up to me on the beach in Jamaica and try to sell me whatever, weed, coke, drugs, a hat, whatever they're trying to sell me.
Yeah.
I always want to be respectful in my heart of what I have being there and they don't have. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes me try to be a good person.
Sure.
But I want to convey that to other people because I think there's so many stigmas about being, as Pearl Jam once sang, WMA, white man in America, right? Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, it's when you go places, you don't want to be the ugly American.
Sure. But there's also a fine line because, I've been to, it pops in my mind, Cambodia. And also in Africa where they say, if a kid comes up to you and asks you for money, don't give it to him. And that's kind of like – it kind of tugs at, your morals too because you're like, well, it's a kid, But they don't want to teach kids that, that's how I get my money in life is by begging either, So, they say no because in the big picture it actually helps them know that, it's not that easy and you should try to, work for it or, make sure you go to school and earn stuff. You're not going to go your whole life just like that.
I of all the things I've done in my life traveling, and I try to, this week I'm trying to talk about poverty and feeding. We had Catonville.
Yeah.
There's so much poverty in America, in our own community, and insecurity and all that. You do feel differently when you travel other places, and you feel like, well, they're not in America. So they people want to be here, and we feel superior in some way, and we have this complex about us. I went to Cuba in 99 with Scotty P, who owns Amici's, if you're familiar with Amici's. And we went over as media members, back when I was in the real media. We flew from Miami down to Cuba. And before we left, his mother and sister were very involved with the Harrisburg Senators, I think they were called, the baseball team that played on the island. And Scott came up with this idea with his mother. And this is when baseball was doing cardboard, the whatever it was called.
Cardboard leather.
Give things to Dominican kids, Venezuelan kids. Yep. I mean, I remember when I was, my father would always tell me this story, my gringo father, my pop. When we went to Venezuela in 73, kids were playing baseball with stockings. Mm-hmm. They would, stockings wrapped up. That was a baseball in Venezuela in 1973. So we went down to Cuba, and Scott and his mother and his sister put together a whole bag of Harrisburg Senators hats, baseballs. I collected some hats. We just collected stuff and said, I think the radio station, I had the radio station. I said, if you want to give some stuff away, and we wound up packing a suitcase full of nothing but stuff to give away, and we didn't know how to give it away. And Scott's creative, and he's such a good man at Amici's. We had a cab driver that was going to take us out to the Varadero, the famous beach, out to the east of Havana. And we thought we're being watched and all the shit that our parents told us about Cuba and they're going to murder us in the hill. Nothing like it. I found the Cuban experience to be completely different than anything anybody ever told me it was going to be
it
like.
It often is.
Right. I was 31 at the time, so I'm feeling it's 25 years ago now, 26 years ago. So we go down for the famous game, the Castro, Angelos, we were there for all that. We had this stuff and Scott's like, how do you want to give it away? And I'm like, I don't know. And Scott's like, I bet if we drive around, we'll find kids playing baseball. And we'll just give it to them.
Yeah. Oh.
Dude.
Not good.
I will cry. No. It was like it was the most Santa Claus thing I think I've ever experienced in my life.
Yeah.
I don't know. You can feed ducks and they come and they're happy. And I feed squirrels every day and they're happy. Yeah. Then there's human beings and these children.
Yeah.
We went to this field. I have pictures of all of it. We said we wanted to play ball with them. And they let us into the game.
Cool.
So I'm out there pitching. I was wearing a tank top, a Hot Shots movie tank top and a hat. And I'm pitching to these kids. And there were three sizes of kids, small, medium, and large. There was the 6 to 8 year old kids, the 9 to 12, and then the kids that were like getting puberty, getting getting big and could play, 14, 15 years old. They were on three different diamonds. And we went to the smallest kids thinking, let's give it to the smallest kids. Yeah. Well, all the other kids came over, and we got a game up. We had a big game, and we played ball.
Wow.
And then we went to give everything away. And the kids were fighting, yeah, not over the baseballs or anything. They all wanted the hats.
Mm.
And Scott's like, damn it.
Yeah.
If I would have known that hats would have been the thing they wanted, the hats were gone. And when I gave the kid the ball, he gave it back to me because he didn't want the ball. He wanted the hat.
Mm.
You know what I mean? These are little kids.
Mm-hmm.
I'll cry if I talk about it because it was, like, insane. But it's amazing when you go to other places. I haven't talked about that. I don't think I've told that story three times on the air. I haven't thought about it much.
Yeah.
But you do think about what you can do to leave behind something that really is good that isn't about your own thing. Give them what they want. They wanted hats.
Yeah.
Scott's like, my God, I feel like I want to go down to the store and buy 30 hats and bring them back to them.
Yeah.
Spend 10 bucks or whatever it would be.
Mm-hmm.
But, when you travel, you get humbled as the white American, I think. You do.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know the whole tipping thing in different parts of the world, too, where, like, you know, it's almost insulting to over-tip because then it seems like you're just this, like, just dishing it out because you feel bad for them. There's, like, a fine line in, like, giving what's appropriate and over-giving and being arrogant about it, too.
And being showy.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Jason Seamer's here. His band is rocking down in Fells Point. They are bad with names. He's a wonderful photographer. He's taking some great pictures out in Eastern Africa. 3 weeks abroad. Like, you're done. You don't even have a next place. I've asked you three times. You don't have a next place. You're done for a while.
There's always things that, like, pop into my head when people ask that question. Like, I'm just going to say this now because this is what I've been thinking for now. But, like, I'd love to go to Madagascar.
Okay.
That's one of those, like, you know, another African country, but, like, its own, you know, off the continent kind of thing, its own island.
You don't want to do Tasmania or, you know, you're not?
Like Australia, down in Australia.
That's another one of those kind of islands.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like that, I don't know if that's rebuilding because it burned like a number of years ago. Maybe not. But no, Madagascar just seems like such its own place. And,
well, the Faroe Islands was that for you, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nobody knows where they are.
Okay.
And you did that.
Yeah, so last January, as I said, I usually travel in January because that's when I kind of have a window of time where I can do stuff. I'm like, where should I go? And I was like looking online at different like photographers, like pages and different blogs and stuff. And I came across an article that said like, I had been seeing photos of the Faroe Islands. So basically it's an 18 island archipelago off of, it's like an hour and a half flight from Iceland and it's owned by Denmark. All these islands are connected by sea tunnels, and it's a very wealthy nation, actually.
Sea tunnels?
Yeah. There's 18 islands, and I think there's at least, I don't know, 8 or 9 sea tunnels. So not all of them are connected, but they're working on it because they do have the money.
So they're kind of between, like, Scotland and Iceland and west of Norway.
Yep.
And sort of south of southeast of Greenland, which Iceland is as well. So Iceland's very close to Greenland.
Yeah.
So, yes. Okay.
Yeah, so I was on I see a lot of photography online, and I saw these, like, mysterious photos of these, like, houses with these, the grass roofs. And I'm like, that's so interesting. It's so, like, just cozy and intriguing. And you see these mountains and rolling hills, and everything's, like, super green, of course, during the summertime. But I saw this article that said, you know, the true adventurer would go here in the winter because no one else is there. It's off the beaten path.
How many people live in these islands total? I mean, is it 10,000 people
no,
maybe?
No, there's, I want to say there's 50. Oh, man. I want to say there's like 55,000 people total.
In all the islands. Okay, I can Google that.
Don't quote me on that. But
I can Google it.
But on top of that, there are the sheep outnumber the people like 2 to 1. So literally when you're driving down the highway, there's like sheep crossing the road. And
53,270 people. 53,270 people live on these islands.
Yeah.
In the middle of the North Atlantic Ocean. You know, you think maybe like the boat, right? The Titanic kind of like that's that area of the world.
Yeah, so like 35,000 of those people, I believe, live in the capital city, which is called Tórshavn, and the rest are spread out throughout the islands. And it's, you know, it's everything's about an hour and a half to 2 hours away from the capital city. So you do these rolling.
And when you show up in a car in these places, these people have never seen, they don't see tourists. They're probably very skeptical of you, right?
They're starting to see more and more tourists. Like, it's becoming like the new
Iceland.
Nobody's
going there to kill anybody. It's in the middle of nowhere, right?
Totally.
Like, literally.
Yeah.
Like, if you're there, you're just a wanderluster. You're
Absolutely.
Not there to see the Rolling Stones.
No. No. I mean, absolutely not.
Faroe, F-A-R-O-E, yep. Faroe Islands. Please look them up if you've never. Dude, this is what makes you interesting. You know that. I mean, not the music and the art and all that stuff, but your Oriole baseball song from 35 years ago. This makes you much more interesting than that.
Thank you. That's okay.
But everybody knows your song, but you hate your song. Do you watch any baseball? Are you just you're done with sports? Or I never talked to you about this.
Yeah.
You had 10 years where you felt a bit the Orioles, even when they hated me. I didn't really hate them. They hated me.
Yeah.
I did hate them because they ripped me off. I mean, lied to me. You know, when you don't pay a $30,000 bill, you forget that thing.
Yeah.
But you had your own exit from baseball. And I think when you were a young man and you and I were rivals, friends, you're running the video, I'm nasty now. Like, you thought you were going to spend your life in
rivals.
Baseball and sports, right?
Yeah.
Well, you would have been Orioles.com first in. You would have been a Masson employee. We would have been rivals. Trust me.
Trust me.
We would have been.
I got you. I mean, I grew up wanting to be a Major League Baseball player. Played all throughout. Played Little League. Played high school. Didn't get recruited. I made all county and stuff in high school. But, like, then I didn't get recruited. And I was like, well, I guess I'm just going to see what I try to get a career. but I always loved video. My story is, like, when my dad would go to leave for work, you know, he had his video camera there that he would use to film our Little League games. And I would, when he was at work, I would take the camera and just film like little skits, film myself playing ball around the yard, stuff like that. And then I started teaching myself how to edit just tape to tape VHS from like the camera to the VHS recorder. And I started teaching myself video production basically. And then when I was in high school, I was in the video department. And then college, I went to Towson and did TV and film. Graduated from there, and I landed my first job.
You were
Orioles.
Kind of a first in video guy with the Orioles. I mean, they had just gotten a Jumbotron and were making. I mean, I remember the videos you made for Brady Anderson. Every player had a fun little video that played.
Yeah.
Anybody
Heroes
that's old enough remember, Heroes of Birdland. Yeah. That was your work back in the early days before there was a Mass and before there was a .com. And it was the kind of stuff that, you know, home team sports probably. That would have been the next thing for you if you stuck around, would have been to be in television baseball production of the games, right?
For sure, yeah. I mean, Memorial Stadium.
That would have been a different life for you. You still do that work. You do a lot of that work.
For sure.
You just have exited from, like, Peter Angelos, basically, early on, quite frankly.
It was my dream job after wanting to play baseball professionally. So, like, when I was able to – because I was a – you know, I wrote that song for the Orioles growing up, just a passionate Orioles fan. So when I landed that job, I was like, wow, this is the best job I could have because I can do – I'm part of baseball still. I'm in the major leagues, but in a different way.
And you get to go to games for
and
free.
And I'm doing video. Yeah, and my work is being displayed in front of, like, at that time, full house.
3.8 million people.
A lot of people. Yeah. And I was 21 years old. With that job, so like that was
so
like
you were
I made
significantly
it.
Younger than me. So you're I'm 57. I'll be 57 this year. So like my perception of you, this is 1993, 94. I was 25 or 26. You were like 19.
Yeah, I started. I think I was 21 when I started in 97. I was there from 97 to 07.
Well, you were always strumming the guitar too. I mean, you had that going on too.
For sure. And I was writing music, and I released a couple of my own CDs during that time. And then
I have one of them. I still have one of the CDs. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You and Ed Lauer. I mean, you guys were making CDs in the 90s. It was inexpensive to do, and you had it in your heart that maybe you could be that guy, right?
Yeah. And I like to take my creative stuff kind of to the next level and think outside of the box. And like when I was writing the Orioles song, I was like, well, how can we like update the Orioles magic into more of a new modern age thing? And I want to put my own life experience to it and tell my story growing up being an Orioles
fan. It was a little
fan.
Gin Blossomsy is what I would call it. Is that fair?
I love the Gin Blossoms.
But that was that era. I mean, that song,
it was pop,
I can almost hear him singing
radio,
that song. Yeah, I
for
mean,
sure.
It was that kind of song.
Yeah, but every lyric I put into that song was like from my heart, what I felt growing up as an Orioles fan. So that they started playing it at the park, and I don't know, now it's been, that was 98. So however many years it's been now.
When did you leave? 98?
07. I started in
98. So you were there during Free the Birds.
Yeah.
Oh, see, we were rivals. See, I knew I got
you
that.
You weren't a rival.
Everybody had to hate me there, trust me, in order to keep your job.
They didn't hate you. No.
Flanagan
that was
didn't
thing.
Hate me. The rest of them, trust me.
Yeah.
I got unfriended by everybody and on LinkedIn. But you left, so we're here.
Yeah,
I
have nothing but appreciation for the job that I had there, the people I met, experience I got.
But you were done with baseball when you left.
I was burned out.
Done. You don't go to games anymore, right?
I've been to a handful of games since I left there, and I don't hate the Orioles. I still have friends that work there, I just want to say the right thing, and the real thing is that I always appreciate what I had there, and I appreciate the people that are still there, and I appreciate the opportunity, and it was a great life experience. And
how many years? 14?
10.
You were only there 10. It felt like you were there in 93 and 94, but you weren't. You didn't get there until 97.
97 to 07.
All right. So I'm mixing it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were late Brady Anderson, and I'm trying to think of the
Yeah. So I saw Cal retire, and, you know, then things got unraveled, and people weren't coming to games, and it was like, oh, you know, why isn't the Jumbotron firing up the fans? Because we're not hitting the ball or pitching. You know, I don't want to go there. But anyway.
No, but I would say for both of us, we spent so much time in baseball that we saw the warts. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
And just say, like, it's a tough gig being your job with the Orioles. Yeah. It's incredibly demanding.
Yeah.
Baseball's demanding just
totally.
Just for everybody.
Yeah.
And I think you and I being around it really, I know I gathered this very early on, how difficult it was to be Mike Mussina or Cal Ripken
totally.
In 1993,
yeah.
94.
And like the whole
No matter how much money they were making, whatever, just doing that job and
yeah.
performing at that level,
yeah.
packing your bags, going on the road for 10 days,
totally.
Coming, like just staying healthy,
yeah.
all of those things.
The pressure's on for everybody across the board, no matter if you're the front office or the team or the vendors or the ushers.
And it is fun to get out of that, I would think, after doing it, right? Like the last 50, now you're just a fan again.
It's a relief.
If you want to be.
And I don't want to say, yeah, I mean, I've lost. I don't really follow it as much, honestly. And when somebody asks me to go to a game and say, hey, let's meet at Pickles, and then we'll go, you know, just grab a seat and just enjoy the atmosphere. You know, of course, I'm staring at the Jumbotron, like, what are they doing now? Oh, that's wrong. They shouldn't be playing that. They shouldn't be doing, you know, that kind of stays with me.
I find that I see the game better at home on TV being thrown
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
That when I am at the game, the game's not as important as hanging out with you. You know what I mean? Hanging out with the people I see.
Yeah,
I'm there. Not to be seen or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm there to immerse with people.
Yeah.
If I want to watch the game, I stay home. Like, I watch the game at home a lot, and I talk about
that.
The games.
Yeah.
But when I wind up going down there, the game doesn't ever feel important to me. What feels important is, oh, my God, there's Seymour. I haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah,
how you doing?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think over time that stuff kind of, like, becomes more golden. You know, you're just like, and like my friends that are still there, I see, catch a beer with once in a while, and I'm like, you talk about those old times, like glory days, whatever. But like, you appreciate it. You appreciate it on
player.
A whole different level. You know, it's not work anymore, and that's a relief. But you also have those memories.
See, people think I hate the Orioles and I love the Orioles. I just challenge the Orioles, and I want them to be better than they've been for our lifetime. And Clancy does too. Clancy came out the other. So we have, you know, you, Clancy, me. There's a lot of. There's mojo, and you know what? They might win the World Series, and I told Clancy this yesterday. When they win, I'm not going to cry and jump. I don't know any of these. If they invite me back, great. I hope they do. I know Mark Fine. God bless you. I'm really a media member. If you want to let me in, I'll come. But whenever they win in the end, people like you and me that have been whatever we are, disenchanted, removed, removed ourselves, expatriated, the people that have stayed and love it, really, really love it, I want them to win for them. And
sure.
I felt that way 2 years ago when it was a little closer and they went down to Texas, and this year it didn't feel like they were good and they didn't have enough pitching.
Yeah.
Last year they might have been able to win. The notion that Clancy, it's going to make him happy, that makes me happy.
Absolutely.
Period.
Yeah.
And the fact that John Angelos is gone too, it won't make him happy. That'll make me happier. But in a general sense, for everyone that has suffered through it and loves it, and it's on their Christmas tree, and right now in February they're waiting for opening day and they can't wait for it, feel like a kid again when they're at the yard, I will feel great for this city because the city deserves it. The city deserves a championship.
Totally. I mean, you always want to feel good. You always want people to feel good about life, you know? It's something they've been, you know, following
forever. You made me feel good
forever.
When I saw those African smiles, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that is good. So.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you had as much fun as I wanted you to have. 21 days in Africa, this guy, East Africa. His Oriole baseball song is still out on the internet. His work is out on the internet. You can buy his pictures from the Faroe Islands or any of the other places. Find him at Jason Seaman Photography. Is that correct?
Seymour.
Did I say Seaman? What is
yes.
it? Seymour? I said Seymour. Seymour Photography. Did I say it right? Seimer. Did I do it right?
Now you're right.
Seamans is the video. It's Seiemens.
That's right.
Is the name of the company.
Right.
All right.
Seymour. You got this.
Seymour of Africa with him. All right. We're at State Fair. My bowl of soup. You were like going to drink your coffee. And
I've
I was
had a couple sips.
I had two bites of my
soup. It's been so riveting, you know? I'm serious.
Just keep drinking.
I'm not being...
Oh, he get his own podcast. He'll have his own. He has his equipment, too. go see his band, Bad With Names. I have been bad with crab cakes here. I haven't had a crab cake all week, even a Coke, because I took one home. It's the Magic 8 Ball from Maryland Lottery and our friends at Wise Markets who put us out doing this thing. They're Wise Conversations. Started as a crab cake tour. It's a cup of Super Bowl. It's all for the Maryland Food Bank. I have a whole trunk full of non-perishables that I'm going to drop off over at Catonsville Emergency Assistance on the way out of here. We're going to wrap it up at Cooper's North in Timonium on Friday. Friday's nuts. I mean, I've got like a dozen guests and people coming by, more than I even know. We've had Joe Flacco this week. We've had Jamal Lewis this week. We've had Mike Nolan and a whole bunch of Pro Football Hall of Fame voters. Good luck to Marshall Yanda and Terrell Suggs and Steve Smith, as well as Lamar Jackson on the MVP. I am wrapping up from State Fair so I can go eat my soup and look at Seamer's pictures. Back for more. We are Baltimore Positive in WNST. Stay with us.